narrative.
3, 2, 1. This is Wade Rathke. It's Wade's World. You know what that means. It's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30. We're on KABF, 88.3 FM on your radio dial, 100,000 watts of people power. KABF, the voice of the people, broadcasting from Little Rock, Arkansas, www.kabf.org, live streaming so you can hear us around the world. And within 48 hours, it'll be podcast and available so any of you can tell people about the show and listen later. You know, in Wade's World, every week we talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Jill O'Reilly of Ottawa, Canada, Ottawa Acorn, and we're talking to Scott Nunn, New Westminster, Vancouver, British Columbia Acorn. What we're talking about is the fact that these days nobody organizes disability rights or welfare recipients. And not only are these two folks involved in organizing campaigns with them, but we're winning some. Jill, Scott, what is a clawback? Help us here. What's a clawback? Is it lobster fishing in Maine? Is it crabbing in Louisiana? What's a clawback? Help me.
Well, that sounds a lot nicer than what it actually is. Unfortunately, it's just any government policy that ends up taking money out of poor people's pockets. And the most well-publicized clawback, for example, in BC, was based on child support payments. And it's well-known because Acorn members stood up and fought back to end this policy. Basically, in BC, if you're a single parent on income assistance or disability assistance and you also receive child support, or basically any money for that matter, you need to tell the government about it, claim it to the government, and in the case of child support, you get that money dollar for dollar taken away from you on the next check. Unlike where if you're working, you get an $800 exemption, and then after that gets clawed back dollar for dollar. Child support, not that case. I guess they don't find the government didn't find raising children to be earned income or worthwhile income. I'm not sure, but that's basically the
thing. Now, is this a new policy in BC, or did it just show up, or what?
It's a long-standing policy in BC and across Canada. You know, previously in BC, up until 2001, you were allowed to keep $100 before the
clawback. And that's not much either, is it?
Not in the most expensive city, the most expensive province of Canada, too.
Right on. Gotcha. And
so you were able to keep $100 when the Liberals, very neoliberal for our American audience, took power in a sweeping majority in 2001. They ended the $100 exemption and they just took the whole thing, which basically equaled the clawback. Actually, depends on who you listen to, but about $13 to $17 million a year was taken from these, some of the poorest families in BC, and then back in government coffers.
And once they take it, what's the incentive for anybody to collect the child support or to go after people that aren't paying? I mean,
well, the incentive is that the government actually forces the people to be able to get on income assistance and disability assistance. You sign over your family maintenance rights, and then the government can force you to take your ex to court and then get an order for them to pay. So that also locks, oftentimes these are women that we're talking about, and they're now locked in this relationship with someone they've been trying to get away from. So that was one of the big problems that came up with our members told us about while we were working on this campaign. So the incentive is for the government to want to be able to actually get that money because it helps them out. And ironically enough, that money then goes into funding programs in the family maintenance enforcement program that actually, for the most part, helped higher income people. One of our members was really good at explaining that.
So a poor mom, and most of these were women, were caught in a vice, right? They had the ex-husband out there who's not necessarily the best, most reliable support payer, and they have the government on the other hand with its foot on their neck trying to get the money. And then if the money came in, instead of it being, shoo, I'm a little bit ahead this month and maybe somebody gets a new pair of shoes, you're telling me they would deduct whatever dollar for dollar they got from that child support from the payments. And sometimes I bet people were caught short.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought up the point of reliability, because unfortunately some folks who pay child support aren't the most reliable, and there's been plenty of circumstances when someone would claim the money, they would get that deducted off their next check, and then the support payer would miss that particular payment, which would leave our member short. One of our members was actually short and was had to live off of a $48 check one month. It was a really grotesque situation, and she was a real very motivated member to stop this clawback because she really experienced it firsthand.
So we always talk in organizing about campaigns being immediate, which means we can win them quickly. It's important to people right now. Specific means that we can really define what they are. And winnable. Now, something had been going on almost 14, 15 years. How in the world did you all think you could win this campaign, Scott?
Well, just basically, it was one of those campaigns or one of those issues that anyone who heard it for the first time had that reaction, like, that's not true.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. And then their next reaction is, you know, first it's denial, then it's anger, and then, well, you know, that whole process there, right? And so, well, we saw that every single person had that reaction, and ultimately you find out, people end up saying, no, that can't happen, that needs to stop. So it was one of those issues that if you really could get it out there, we knew that it would take off. And
well, that's the other thing we used to say as a campaign, if it's morally right, if it's so clearly morally right, you can trump a lot. And this one sounds like terrible situation, but how can you question whether it's morally right?
Right. And you know, on top of that, we started this campaign shortly after a provincial election that the Liberals won, where their campaign slogan was, families first. And we really kind of seized on that, saying, well, whose family are we putting first here? Not our members, not, you know, people who really need to be put first.
So y'all did actions. What'd you do? How'd you go after these folks?
Well, we started the campaign off by holding monthly actions just before check to issue day at social assistance offices in Burnaby, Surrey, New West, Tri-Cities, basically all around the Metro Vancouver area.
So those are like working and moderate income communities around Vancouver?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for, yeah. And so we started doing that, and we had about 7 months worth of actions there where we started getting more and more traction in the media, but we were getting stonewalled by the minister. So then we started doing phone actions where on a certain day we would have all our members just phone the minister's office over and over and over again until they basically relented and gave us a meeting. We did get a meeting in December, which the minister showed up late for and then cut short. Then we had another action in January. We got more press, and then he gave us another meeting. Still wasn't really prepared, so we could tell that this was not a priority of the government. Luckily, around that time, the press had hit a tipping point where allies started jumping on board, and you know, we had already been working to try to get a champion to work on the campaign, and that sort of stuff started that sort of ally building came through and started to coalesce into a coalition of folks that then helped raise the profile a little bit more and give it a little bit more strength. So we got a champion inside a parliament that helped move the issue to the floor of the legislature.
And there's actually a happy ending on this story.
Right. Our members continued to fight, had big actions, great media events, and then ultimately a year and a half after the campaign started, just in February, the provincial budget came out, and the clawback, not only, we just thought the exemption was going to get brought back. Maybe $150, $200, if we're getting crazy, $300.
Yeah.
The whole thing got scrapped. So that's $13 to $17 million a year back into the pockets of these, you know, single parents on income assistance and disability assistance.
Well, I know I got to read the press, and it was very clear that y'all were just a bee in their bonnet. Y'all were on their butts, and they didn't like it. And the newspapers were very clear. Acorn was the key issue here. But they also, a little bit of fancy math over there on the budget, they were giving this, stopping the clawback, but then giving away a whole bunch of 1% or benefits. So
yeah.
It wasn't, you know, we could sort of bite our lips seeing what they were getting away with, but clearly we had them on this.
Well, that's unfortunately true. The Liberals ended what was supposed to be a temporary tax cut that returned $255 million back into the 1%ers' pockets. However, this government has been in power for 13, 14 years. They had attacked unions. They attacked low-wage workers. They had kept the minimum wage frozen for 10 years. It was almost impossible to get any victory at these people, and they made it very clear they didn't want to do anything about this, and we and our members made it happen. So just in that victory alone was...
There must be some people very happy now.
Right.
Because now if they get $500 of support, that's $500 ahead. You can actually get yourself in a better situation if that continues for a while.
February 18th is a very emotional day in the Acorn office, but we're all very happy, yeah.
Well, so we're recent. Now, these clawbacks were an issue in Ottawa as well, Jill. Tell us about how that worked.
We had a social assistance committee that formed in 2010, And members just wanted to work on, like, increasing the rates of social assistance. And then...
Now, in the U.S., would that be called welfare?
Yeah, welfare and, like, disability. They kind of lumped it together.
If we'd only just kept calling it social assistance, we might still have a better deal.
Yeah. And a fellow had called in. He saw the action. He lived in Cornwall, which is, about a 45-minute drive outside of Ottawa. And he said, I want to join. I had this great issue around the clawback. And we had known about the income clawback in Ontario, where every dollar you make, 50 cents gets clawed back, and there's a threshold of $200. Or now it's 200, but it was about, 160, I think, at the time. And, he came to the meeting, he joined, and he presented this issue to the committee, and the committee was very, involved and wanted to do this. So then we started just running, like, actions around the clawback. And we actually didn't run that many actions, and, we had a meeting with one of the MPPs at the time, and he committed to put this in the budget. And there was other groups working on this, I think, in Toronto, too. But, it actually increased the threshold to about $200 now. So,
that's something.
Yeah.
It's going in the right direction. And now with what's happening in BC, maybe something will catch fire. But you've also been all over an issue around housing supplements.
Yeah. And so the committee of members that were really committed wanted to sort of shift gears. And this year, they picked, like, one of the top issues they wanted to work on was the amount of money that you get on your check in Ontario primarily for people on the Ontario Disability Support Program is $479. And the Liberal government, who's been in power, for 11 years and, before that, or the Conservatives, like, it hasn't been increased. There's been an increase on the check for the cost of living, but the actual amount for the rental increase on your check, like, hasn't increased. And for social assistance, I think it's like 386. And so our members, made a decision they wanted to work on increasing, like, that amount of money. The demand, we're actually still in sort of a debate around the demand, but the first thing that they wanted to talk about was doing an immediate infusion of, like, 20%, like, that $100 was, like, needed right away. Because even if you are renting in Ottawa, you can't even get a rooming house for, less than $500. So they said at least somebody could get, that and get off, whatever, system, if they were in a shelter situation and have their own room. And so we did a great action and we kicked it off. And the crazy thing about the members who are involved in disability and even social assistance campaigns is their commitment, to the process. And, like, Scott was saying, like, people are really invested in these issues. And we had 17 yeses for that action and 23 people showed up. And, we have...
As organizers, we know that's good
crazy.
Turnout there.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
and, like...
This is not a Facebook-like.
No.
This is real people.
It's totally real
boots
people.
On the ground.
And they're just so pissed about it. Like, it's just, they can't... it's such an emotional issue for people. And so we hope that, by doing a little bit more research and maybe, increasing the threshold, I think, of that demand, then we can, run some more aggressive, actions and, work around that.
I know you got fantastic press on the early actions.
Yeah, for sure. We actually got press from the Ottawa Sun, which is traditionally like a conservative paper, and they haven't come to anything in like a year and a half. And that was one of the first things that they came to, and we didn't expect that. We had major coverage from The Citizen, which is the, sort of liberal paper, liberalish paper in the city, and, the radio stations, and, so it was great, and our members are energized to move forward. So.
Here's what I've got to ask both of you, though, given the experience you've just related and the success on these clawback campaigns. Everybody says increasingly that nobody is organizing really poor families, really poor people, and that you can't win on these issues in these days of 1% and neoliberalism, and we could say the slogans over and over again. But yet, both of y'all have found that we can not only organize, but win. Now, was this widely supported among the rest of your members? I mean, you're talking about a very committed group that was very self-interested in terms of the results, but how did the... And you were able to pull the general community support. Other ACORN members in the community were supportive as well?
Definitely. In our organization, there was widespread support. If anything, once this campaign really started heating up, we needed to divert resources to the campaign to keep the momentum going. And I never once heard a complaint about, well, why are we spending so much time on this? Where sometimes you do hear that if someone's issue is not being worked on as much as they would like. I never heard that on our campaign.
I think one of our members, like Mavis, was just like, you don't choose to be like disabled. Like, there's no choice,
good
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and you're medically there and you have no other choice. So it's an easy issue for a lot of people to say, yes, like these are, you know, people who are physically or mentally, you know, held back, and they have no other choice but to live in, you know, poverty. And so it's just wrong not to, you know, be involved in the issue. And so, yeah, I think it shocks a lot of our members who might be of mid-income, like hearing that, like, you know, people who are in a wheelchair are like, you know, forced to like, you know, put more
of their
income. Yeah, and shelter and like, you know, eating from food banks, you know, consistently. It's really bad.
Today, Wage World, we're talking to Jill O'Reilly, head organizer of Acorn Canada in Ottawa, and Scott Nunn, head organizer of Acorn Canada in British Columbia. Last week on Wage World, we talked to a very interesting young professor from Cornell University, Adam Seth Levine, and he'd written a book called American Insecurity, How Economic Fears Lead to Inaction, Not Action. Now here, the stories we're talking about, who could have more economic fears than the kind of families y'all are talking about, yet they've stood up. And part of what he looked at in the book towards the end was, how was it that Acorn was so successful when everything that his other studies showed, from PIRG, Move On, various groups and surveys in the U.S., indicated that people's message was scaring people from being active, even if they were committed to the issue. And y'all are finding a different experience. Now, one of the things that he argued was that, well, maybe Acorn was exceptional because initially people got involved on other issues that might not be their core economic issue. And I don't know if from your experience you'd say that's true or not, but he was looking at maybe they became involved in their community, their neighborhood, and were dealing with those issues that weren't, you know, every dollar in their check, and then they got motivated from that experience to move to another issue, and therefore it kept them, it built cohesion and activity. And it's a very interesting. Once the question starts getting this long, you know, we're in trouble on the radio, so I don't want to go too far. But you hear what he was saying, which,
yeah.
There's some amount of, you know, I told him, both in a review I wrote in Social Policy and on the radio, you know, I'm not sure what I think exactly about what he said, but he's got a point, because we do bring people in those community organizing drives, and how do these disability and welfare-based groups get started in either Ottawa or BC? Did they come out of the neighborhood work, or were they started independently, or how'd y'all end up on this trail?
I think it came out of like members joining on other issues, you know, and I think that
now you're talking about Professor Levine's theory.
He may
be right here. Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. And then like, you know, it's just like we've won that stop sign or like that speed bump or, you know, gone after the landlord. But like talking about income is just, I also think, is something traditionally that Acorn, you know, does, right? And like nobody else, I think a lot of other nonprofits don't want to touch, you know, welfare and disability because it's not politically, you know, an issue that parties want to touch, even progressive parties. And so we're the only people that touch it. And I think that really draws a strength from our membership and why they want to keep working on these issues too.
Yeah. Well, and your point, I've got to jump in here even before I ask Scott to also answer, is that, you know, how many years have we, I know me and any of y'all, had to defend why we do stop sign? I mean, I've often said stop
right.
signs, drainage, and loose dogs. If we had a program on that, we could move the whole world. But,
yeah.
I mean, the truth is sometimes people, you know, progressives and others say, you know, what, those aren't issues.
For sure.
Well, part of what Professor Levine argued is maybe exactly those kinds of issues that weren't about people's economic fears but other interests they had were motivationally enough to build a organizational solidarity so that people were willing to take issues without fear that led to inaction economically. It's a crazy theory, but maybe he's got a point. Scott, what do you think about all this?
Well, it comes back to the leadership development that we do, right? So
on those other
issues, it's those folks who are impacted by it, learning or being empowered to stand up and get used to speaking on their own, not having someone speak for them, and to also see that when they work with each other, that there is power there, and that it easily is transferable to larger issues that might seem untouchable previously. So you know, there are like our first leader on the clawback campaign came in very fiery and wanting to work on a lot of different issues, but was terrified of talking to the media and not really comfortable with giving speeches. And it was through working on other issues that that kind of confidence was developed, and then was able to transfer forward, you know, move forward on that. So through that lens of leadership development, and that I guess I would agree with that point if that's where he was taking it, where like these smaller campaigns feed in that way.
Well, I mean, he's very clear when, if you read the book, but if you haven't, and most of our listeners clearly haven't, and I'm, you know, now the reigning expert on this book. I mean, besides the author, I think I'm it. But, you know, we've always argued that one of the strengths of ACORN is being multi-issued.
Right.
And we'd argue for a reason. Certainly, I found that organizing welfare recipients in the late 60s. I mean, their issues were not just welfare. They were also housing. They were also schools. They were also the neighborhood and crime. You know, it's a whole grab bag of things for everybody. So, you know, it doesn't just define it about one issue. But being multi-issued, exactly to your point, probably makes it easier. But I also think, you know, in the U.S. particularly, there's so much people, there's so much that people try to denigrate folks for being on public support. And Canada may be the same, may be different. Unfortunately, it's becoming more like the U.S. than not. But the fact that people would find a comfort from leadership development and from activity in the organization to be able to bring forward their personal issue and find a base, I think that's also got to explain how they could rally such support. Because obviously, if people were doing actions every month, Scott, that's a heavy appetite of actions on this thing.
It definitely was a heavy appetite. And, you know, as soon as we won that action, won the campaign, I thought there might actually be a little bit of a breather. I was wrong on that. I've been getting calls like, when's the next disability meeting? We've got to start talking about raising the rates now. So
now you've unleashed the storm, huh?
Exactly.
Uh-oh. And then when they see what's happening in Ottawa, they're going to want you to do something about housing and rent. Oh, my God. I don't know how you touch that in B.C. Yeah.
Well, the housing rate that Joel's explaining there is only $375 in B.C. It also hasn't gone up since 2007 or 2008. So, yeah, that's actually an issue. It's come up.
You know, and we're even talking about, I mean, obviously we are all involved in living wage campaigns. I know in your cities in Canada and across federally in Canada, and we've been trying where we're sort of blocked in some communities and the Congress in the U.S. about living wage. And one of the things we're talking about is how to maybe re-engineer what the right number for a wage increase would be based on what it cost for people to live in individual communities as a single person if they were paying rent. And then if that's only a third of their income, well, what would you need as, you know, a living wage if you were working to be able to pay for that? And we're coming up with figures from, you know, $12 to $13 to $14. It's, you know, in Houston and New Orleans and Little Rock and, you know, in some cases $10.75. But it gives us a way to talk about something other than President Obama's 10-10, or, you know, the 15-5, all of those things are valid. They're important kind of aspirational goals for what income should be. I know figures are even higher in Canada in terms of, I mean, $15, you know. Y'all don't want anything that low in B.C., but still, I mean, if we could win $10.75, $12 and had a way to get there in our communities, that would be huge in places like Little Rock. But How do you get there on these things? And rent's becoming harder and harder, whether it's welfare recipients or disabled, or these communities are just squeezing people out. Where do they go?
I feel like for like the minimum wage campaign that we had been part of in Ontario for the $14, the best like way to explain it, I think, to a lot of people was we wanted 10% above the poverty line. And so just framing it as that, you know, if you're making below that, you're poor. You know, and that was, a way to actually get people to get on board and, like, governments, you know, not all government officials, but some, you know, to come around to that.
You see, the framework in the U.S. is so much more difficult because now that the poor are marginalized, that's why so much is about the working, you know.
Right.
Earned income tax credits are now our new welfare program, so to speak, how you help workers. I mean, if you're really poor, you're in trouble in the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been this way, but there isn't even a pretense of a welfare program.
Right.
So, you know, the argument on stuff like health care is whether or not it's 200% of the poverty level. But a lot of these hospitals that provide charity care, less than the poverty level. I mean, they can set their own rates. It's whatever it wants to be.
Wow.
Well, where does the disability campaign go next, now that you're getting pressure there? I mean, you got some wind behind your sails, but what do you do?
Well, the great clawback issue came out of the membership, so the logical idea would be to have another meeting, let the members want, and let them talk about what they want to see happen.
Oh, well, you know, I can't say differently than that. I mean, you've got me there.
So, you know, I have heard a lot about the housing allowance. Basically, the members want to see the rates go up. And now the question will be, do we just fight on the fact that $908 a month in BC, where, you know, the rates or cost of living is astronomical, do we just focus on that issue, or do we focus on something a little bit, we wrap our arms around a little bit more, like the housing issue, where $375 a month doesn't even get you a monthly single room, a monthly room in a single room occupancy hotel in the downtown east side, which is kind of like the, for lack of a better term, Skid Row of Vancouver. So that's the question, is how do we wrap our arms around the issue? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we've been getting a lot of, you know, say from the members they want to work on the clawback issue from BC because they saw the victory. So that's going to come up at our next meeting, you know, in April. And I think with the housing allowance, a lot of members really want to focus on that because it is hard to justify, like, the rate increase. And that's, they wanted to name it and, like, you know, give it, you know, some more gumption, I guess, if the housing wait lists are so much, you know, longer and growing too, and the, you know, no level of government is, you know, looking to address that anytime soon. So hopefully this frames it in a way that we can, you know, win a larger increase on that particular piece.
Well, I'll tell you what's amazingly important is that we've been having this conversation, because so many organizations in North America and elsewhere are really no longer engaged in trying to figure out how you organize mass numbers of really low income people to build enough power to win things that are this critical in their lives. So, yeah, we may not be sure, but at least we know we're moving. I will tell you, well, I've told this story a million times, but when we were organizing your victory in clawbacks, for example, Scott, we were organizing welfare recipients. There was this famous story in Newark where they were trying to get school clothing for children for welfare recipients in Newark, and they'd done this amazing sit-in in the office in Newark and pushed the welfare director, and they had a caucus, and he had a caucus, and he came back and said, okay, you know, we've figured it out, and we're going to go ahead, you win. You can have school clothing for children. And then, as was a tradition, the members caucus to see if that was good enough, they were going to make the deal. Well, the big issue for welfare rights was adequate income. $5,400, you know, for a family of four. They caucused and they said, hey, you know what? Maybe we've got them on a run. Give them school clothing. Let's go back. Let's tell them we don't want school clothing. We reject that. We want adequate income now. So they went in. They all stood together. They demanded, we want $5,400. We want adequate income now. And, of course, you can guess the moral of the story. So they ended up with 100 and something people arrested, and they won nothing. But, you know, so yeah, these are tough issues. But so we've been talking to Scott Nunn from the Vancouver area, British Columbia Acorn. He's the head organizer there. And we've been talking to Jill O'Reilly, and we've had both of them on Wage World before, so they're going to start running from you in the future. But Canada, what's happening next? You have more of these kinds of questions coming up. We're here at the last piece of the show. What would you leave people with?
I think that, you know, we need to tackle, like, hard issues like this that people, I think the general public doesn't want to look at or talk about. But I think in the end it actually makes our organization stronger and makes our membership more engaged in these larger fights.
Well, and being morally right must help us also build power, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't hurt us to be right.
No.
Definitely. And that's what I saw in this campaign. I took over from our old head organizer, John Anderson, and this was my first larger provincial campaign, and I saw leaders grow. I saw people come together, allies jump on board, and a lot of good things happening. And at the very beginning, like, there were people there who said it wasn't winnable, and it was, you can't beat the Liberals, they don't give up anything. And we moved people, we got people out, but it wasn't exactly like we had hundreds of people storming offices or any of that sort of real mass movement. It was really a dedicated group of people.
Dog on a bone, just kept on hitting it, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I guess that would be like my takeaway for future campaigns, for anyone else, is that like if you get enough people and then have them dedicated and have them be like that dog on the bone, then you actually move people you didn't think you would be able to.
So how do people find out more about this? How can they get in touch with y'all at Acorn Canada if they want more details on what you've done?
They can definitely go to our awesome website at acorncanada.org. They can call our offices. The Ottawa number is 613-746-5999. Call us anytime.
That's right. Yeah. There you go.
All the BC contact info is on the website. Now, if you were interested about the minimum wage stuff we were talking about, you can also follow the hashtag wages rising.
Yeah, wages rising.
I'm still working on my plugs.
That's right. Well, that's why it's a new campaign. This is Wade Rathke. This has been Wade's World on KABF 88.3, 100,000 watts, the voice of people. Next week, we're going to be talking to people from Scott, Arkansas, about problems they're having, even getting into the city, into benefits, being able to do anything. We'll see you next Friday. Thank you.